Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast. The topic we are talking about today is the great return. Do we go back to the office or do we allow people to continue working from home as employers? It's a conversation that we deliberated at length on whether to do a podcast on, didn't we, John?
We did. I mean, it's been discussed a thousand times. We did wonder whether we were going to even bother doing it. We did one back in 2021 in the COVID times, and that's become really a bit obsolete now. So we did think we'll come back to it because people are generally, I think, struggling with it.
They are. And what's prompted this conversation for our listeners? We've done a few all-day sessions with some large corporates that we work with. And no matter what we're talking about, whether it's been coaching, different styles of leadership, one of the issues that keeps coming back, and it often, what's the word, John? It kind of sways the conversation a bit, doesn't it? Whichever way we try to navigate it, an issue that always comes up in these face-to-face sessions is, what do I do when junior or mid-level managers want to still work from home, and how do we balance it against the company policy?
Yeah, it becomes a really very difficult question to answer because people will invariably find comparisons to make. They'll have friends that work in different organisations. They'll have family members that work on different rotas. Some people just simply have to physically go to work because of the nature of their work. But as always, as human beings, we're forever making comparisons, and you literally cannot please all of the people all of the time, and it doesn't work for everybody, and then that starts to cause a lot of difficulty and people become a bit disenfranchised with it. Why can't I work from home on a Friday and a Monday? Because that'd be really, really helpful to me in the way that I run my life. So it has caused quite a lot of sort of conjecture, hasn't it, really, between people around the table when we've gone and spoken to them and we've been delivering our program, our Building Better Leaders program, or we've just been facilitating in a session. It always comes up. And I don't even know that we have all the answers, do we, Rachel? It's about, we've got a lot more questions, so...
We don't have any answers on this, but we did think it was worth a conversation. And what we thought we'd do, and what would be a nice way to start this conversation, is to just discuss the themes that we've seen emerging as experts in this leadership field and some of the questions and issues and conjecture that's coming up against employers, the media, and people's lived experience. So the first theme that we are seeing is obviously the theme that we're seeing in the press, where we've got the great return. So what sparked this is the press and Elon Musk's big return to the office when he made about three quarters of the Twitter workforce redundant and insisted that everybody needs to be working in the office. And what we found, and this is purely our observation, isn't it, John? We're discussing the themes that we've seen, is... this again is sparking what we're seeing in the political sphere, where people are going into an all or nothing camp. So people that had some reservations around working from home, Elon Musk seems to have given them permission to now say everybody return back to the office. So we've had some leaders that kind of err towards that more directive leadership style, which we would call command and control, use what's happened with some large corporations saying that they need everybody in the office. They've almost used that as carte blanche to go back into the office, isn't it, really?
I wonder, I mean, if you got rid of three quarters of your employees, I mean, Twitter's still going, it still functions. You have to wonder, don't you, what were those people doing in the first place anyway? So you're right, it's a really very directive style of leadership. You are doing this, you are coming into work. I want you here between your contracted hours. And I guess we always feared that that would be the case, and why we thought it would never work when people were at home, because you were literally trusting them to do the job that you could see them doing or not doing when they were in the office.
Absolutely. So that's one of the themes we've seen, isn't it? Is that the wave of the media and certain organisations basically changing policy to make everybody need to work at home has sent ripples through the rest of the kind of the working world. And it's reflective of the political sphere where it's started to become an all or nothing. That's one of the themes. The second theme we've seen is moving on from that slightly, but there is a little bit of a nuance around the working from home became, well, like living at work, and some employers starting to look at and reassess, do people actually want to come back to work, and do people have better work-life balance if we do bring them back to the office? So it's almost a similar argument to, we want everybody back in the office, but it's got a more humanistic kind of slant, in that the gap between work and home is probably not good for mental health. Where there was a side to working from home was better work-life balance to some degree, there's also the converse side of that, that's when you're working from home, you don't stop. And people aren't stopping. They don't. It's harder to stop work at 5:30 or 6, and it's easier to sit there watching telly at night and still be on your emails. Yeah. So we've also seen a couple of leaders start to say, I want you back in the office, but I want you back in the office for your mental health. Now, that we're not seeing this often, and whether or not it's an argument to just kind of put a sticking plaster on their command and control antics.
Yeah.
But there are some younger employees particularly that are wanting to come back into the office because they want that separation between work and home that COVID didn't allow.
Yeah. You could make it look like, I'm really concerned about your mental health. You're working at home all the time. You know, it'd be much better for you if you come into the office, because as you say, I really want you to be in the office. So you're just using that as an excuse in many respects to get people back in the office. I've been talking to somebody today. They notice that here's somebody who gets a couple of hundred emails a day until it comes to Friday, and he gets about 15. So, you know, he was suspecting that the people that are working for him are working a 4-day week. And so if you're really bothered about productivity and you see patterns like that, I mean, what does it make you think?
Exactly. So it's bringing up, so that leads us on to the third pattern we're seeing, is this working from home discussion is bringing up big issues, big questions about trust. And trust was inferred in the pandemic because you had to trust. You were given no option but to trust. Now, when trust is not a given, when it's something that can be inferred or not inferred, or people can take liberties or not, it's becoming much bigger of an issue. And this word trust comes up time and time again. And you've just given a classic example of that. Friday's working from home, do people trust that people are actually working or not?
No, and you know, let's be honest, he doesn't, does he?
No.
He wouldn't have said it otherwise. And I guess if you are in a situation where you're working your butt off and you think that other people are getting away with it, it's that comparison that people inevitably make. And I can understand why leaders may well adopt this more directive approach of saying, you will come into the office.
Yeah.
Because it effectively removes that that comparison, doesn't it? Because you can see that people are there. Does that actually make them any more productive?
You could argue either way, couldn't you? I certainly remember when I worked in an office on a Friday, and you didn't get any more work done if you were in the office than if you were working from home on a Friday, because it was a bit of a dog's day or a bit of a long lunch Friday relax day. But that begs a bigger question, going slightly off topic, around one of the modules we do in our Building Better Leaders program around people's energy flows and what is your productivity curve. And that would certainly give an argument for the four-day work week, where people naturally have cycles where they're more productive, where they're in the high performance zone, but you actually need rest and recuperation periods to oscillate back into the high performance zone. Certainly in my working career, I work on a week cycle. I know people that work on month cycles, but I always needed, if I do a day where I'm doing 12 hours or 14 hours, that day after, I'm like a 3 or 4 hour productivity girl. Like, and Fridays is usually my wind down day, you know, because I need to oscillate and have some wind down time, maybe do a bit of learning, a bit of reflection. So maybe after COVID and people being exhausted mentally and physically by pressure, maybe culturally people are just recalibrating on a Friday. Question to ask our listeners of themselves and their teams, do they actually factor in downtime to increase productivity?
That is a good question. I mean, how many times do we listen to people tell us stories of coming off one Teams call and then immediately joining another and then coming off of that and then going on to the next?
And it's not just Teams calls, John. I've got clients that work in the office that are back-to-back meetings day in, day out until Friday. And when does the work get done?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the question I was going to ask. When do you get that time to catch up? And actually, how effective is it to jump from one meeting to another and then back to the, another task, if you like, in your day, when actually you can't even take anything from the meetings that you've attended? And are we also thinking about the fact that we've got quite a bit of presenteeism on an online call, on a Teams or a Zoom, is that we turn up and we're not really mentally listening or contributing to anything that goes on, but we were there. We were just physically there in that people can see you. So is that better than being in a meeting physically in a building with everybody else? How do you engage people if you're constantly doing your meetings online? I know you've talked to quite a lot of the delegates that are on our program a lot, haven't you? And talked to them about the fact that you can't visually see other people's eyes, and on that basis, because there's so many people on the call, it's harder to get a kind of rapport with people.
Yeah, because you can't make eye contact. Eye contact releases serotonin, so you make a connection, which you can't physically do on a Zoom or Teams call. But the same goes for being in physical meetings. I've noticed only this year, but been in a lot of physical meetings, the laptops and the phones are slipping back into the meetings, you know, where you're going in meetings and you're all physically there, but somebody's on the laptop typing. Yeah. And that didn't happen for a while when we first came back. In, you know, everybody was really excited to be back in face-to-face meetings and was super present. But I sense that we're also getting presenteeism in physical meetings where people are trying to multitask and you can't do it. And the question needs to be asked, how are you structuring your meetings? Is everybody clear of their role in the meeting? Do you need to check the timing of the meeting? Do they need to be shorter, punchier? Do you need ground rules that we will, if you're not going to actively listen, you shouldn't be in the meeting? And that takes a lot of rigor. And it's quite tricky, especially I'm thinking about the last meeting I was in that happened, that it was the most senior person in the room that was doing it. And I gave her a little look and she went, she clocked me.
Yeah.
But you know what? Well, somebody's still role modeling that.
Yeah.
what does it send to everybody else? I think there's a big question there about meetings that are physical, meetings that are virtual, and what the etiquette is around that.
And yeah, I mean, what's the etiquette about not having your video on? So people are there, but you can just see the big initial
my view on that one. It's a total waste of time.
Is that the same as being in the meeting but having your laptop open and you just every now and again look up? And for people in that situation and people that are in attendance to that meeting, what, like you say, does that role model? Does that mean that if I have an online meeting, well, if my boss is just typing on their laptop while I'm in a physical meeting, does that mean that I don't need to have my camera on? Is that okay for me to do that? Because I've seen my boss not really being very attentive in a physical meeting. Raise lots of questions.
It raises a lot of questions. And I think the big question, and I think this is the biggest thing that I'm observing, and I'm sure you're observing it too, is we're getting distracted once again by the big clickbait headline issues, i.e. everybody back to work, or let's keep flexible working as a headline, as a reason to attract talent. So you can either work from home as a talent push or protection, or we're going to go back to command and control and say everybody be back in the office just to stir a headline. Yeah. When the real question we should be asking is, what does the work require? And this is a question that we would implore leaders listening to this podcast to ask, is to think about just that discussion that John had about and I had about meetings. Is what is the purpose of that meeting? What is the outcome? Are you valuing presenteeism or being able to see people? Or are you valuing how people act, how people interact, how present people are? Are they engaging in effective dialogue? Are they working? Are they structuring their days where they have enough time to communicate, enough time to do the work, and enough time to brainstorm? And that's a very different question, because if anybody's in back-to-back Zoom meetings or back-to-back face-to-face meetings, you're not being an effective leader and you are not doing an effective work. You know, I'm coaching leaders at the minute, and the big question I'm asking them all the time is, when they're saying I'm back-to-back, saying, who can you delegate that to? What value are you adding to that meeting? What value are you extracting back from that meeting? And what are you costing the business as a resource to sit in a meeting that you don't really need to be at? And then what's the cost to your marriage, to your children, to your health, to your mental well-being, of then trying to do that work between the hours of 5 and 9 p.m. in between bathing the kids and having dinner while it's on your phone, or being distracted to your partner? And I think these are the questions that leaders should be asking, is what does the work require, not what does the leader require of their people?
I think because people spend so much time in meetings, that they do need to have like some boundaries around that. But one of the questions that we get people to ask on the Building Better Leaders program is, what is your role when you go to any given meeting? And that may change throughout the meeting. It may change from one meeting to another. But do people actually understand why they are there? And does everybody understand why different people are invited to it? Because as you say, Rachel, there's not a lot of point in you being in the meeting just if it's just a question of your email was included in the invitee list, but you don't know really why you're there, but you think you better go because...
Or if you need to absorb information rather than contribute,
there's
a way more effective
way of doing that.
Why somebody summarizing the output of that meeting in 15 minutes than you sitting on it for a full hour and a half. Yeah. The other thing I really love about what you talk about when you talk about meeting agendas is, you know, where is the etiquette around setting a meeting agenda? And is the meeting agenda structured as a series of questions? And if those questions are something that you can contribute to that have a knock-on effect on the impact of your work, that's your stress test of going to that meeting. And this is where I do really agree with Elon Musk when he sets out his manifesto for why you should attend meetings and why it's okay to not have a meeting. They do the same at Amazon. And I think that there's a lot we can learn in that etiquette. And I think this is why we get caught up in the headline of, oh, everybody's got to return to the office, where actually they do put quite a lot of boundaries around you're there to work, not attend meetings. So I think there's pros and cons to each, and it's more nuanced than just it's either work from home or work in the office.
The question I really like that you pose, though, is what is actually fit for purpose? What are we there to make? What were we there for? We're there to make decisions. What are we actually in the meeting for? And I think if you start that as a leader, then you've got the best opportunity of being able to try and meet people's needs at an individual level. Now, that depends a lot on the kind of work that you do, of course, but I think that is the best starting point, because this is infinitely more complicated now on the basis that people are not always required just to turn up to work. And so I think everything, all the lines have become a little bit blurred in the way that we're going about it. And I think we tend to be reactive in these situations rather than actually planning it out and really saying, right, what does work for different people in different situations?
Just to add on that what works best for the work, I think what the CEOs that we work with and the leaders that we work with, there's very few that aren't influenced by their own preference and that don't judge other people by their own preference. And it's tricky because the skill of a really good leader is to let go of that aspect of your ego and your preference and your perspective and your worldview, and to actually go, what is best for the work and what is best for the way people that are required to do the work, for them to work. And that requires a dialogue. Now, I'm not saying that you have that dialogue with people, you know, that are super junior, but at a leadership level or a mid-level management level, is it actually the work does require a series of meetings and therefore it would be better to be in the office and face-to-face for those? It might be that the work requires brainstorming. Now, we know full well you cannot do that virtually. You have to be in the office to do that more effectively. And problem solving. Heads around a table, you might need to be in the office to do that. But there also may be days when you're required to design a strategy or to do some reporting or model something or build a model or write a report or have one-on-ones with your team that are more private, in which case it's absolutely more effective and more efficient to work from home. What that requires is fluid discussions week on week to say what days are best served in the office, what days are best served working from home, but how is that best served for the work and the outcome, not individual preferences and not the boss's preferences. And that is tricky because there will be some people that individually work better from home, but that's not best for everybody. And a shining example we've got from this, and this comes up a lot in our mid-level management group, is we run a session on introduction to leadership and we talk about how people best learn. And this is really tricky, isn't it, John? Because a lot of people are like the Gen Z, so people generally under 30, tend to be the ones that, I am generalizing here massively, that maybe want to work from home on a Friday, but actually prefer to be in the office Monday to Thursday because they don't have homes that are conducive to working from home, as such as senior leaders who maybe have a lovely office at home. They like the social, so they want to be in the office. They like the separation of work and home, so they want to be in the office. But also, let's not forget that when you're junior, you learn best by copying off people. You learn best by directive leadership. You learn best by being mentored, which requires that you sit next to somebody that you can learn from. And you also, the next step up in leadership style is to be coached. And that's those intermittent conversations during the day. John, how do I do this? John, have you had this problem? What? Now, you can't manufacture those on Zoom and Teams because it's really intimidating for junior people to pick up the phone to a more senior member of staff to ask those questions. Like, and we all know senior members of staff aren't available to do that. Whereas when you've got those lovely corridor conversations or desk conversations, that coaching style of leadership just happens naturally in the office. But then we get the situation where you say, well, all the junior people need to be in the office all the time, but the senior people are working from home. So who are they learning off?
Yeah. And those lines get blurred again, don't they, between, well, that doesn't work for me. And as you say, but what actually does the work require? What is, and I mean, for somebody who's quite young, maybe not earning that great amount of money, you know, a couple of days in the office might just be a little bit more economic for them. They're not paying fuel bills and what have you by working at home, or just really where they work is not that conducive. So yeah, it's okay for them to do it a couple of days a week because they've got a space to do it. And if they choose the right kind of work, that makes them quite productive. But as you say, the social side of it, the ability to just spin your chair around and ask somebody a question, you don't feel like you can do that online because there's the assumption, isn't it, that you're bugging or you're being annoying. You ask one question and then you put the phone down and then you think, I need to ask another one now. And so if you're constantly on and off the phone, you're just going to make that assumption that the person that you're talking to or you want the advice from or you want to bounce the idea off is going to be getting a little bit fed up with you.
Yeah. Like we say, we had no answers by having this discussion, but hopefully some of these things that we're throwing around are pretty useful. The solution that most people that we have this discussion with in workshops tends to be to dictate a couple of days of working in the office together. And people get really nervous about that, particularly because they've worked in very non-directive organisations typically, and that they like to self-organise. And it feels really uncomfortable to then dictate that you will have to work in the office 2 days a week. But again, we have a conversation around that, don't we, John, in that we say, well, actually, that's okay if it's explained that it's because of the work and because we need to all, leaders need to role model, junior people need to be in on the same day as senior people, so you can have those dialogues and coaching conversations. Yeah. There's no point in having people working in the office part-time and working from home part-time if they're not all in at the same time. So dictating set days and set times and maybe face-to-face meetings is absolutely okay as long as it's explained. Likewise, if you're somebody that feels really strict about dictating that people have to be in the office all the time, 9 to 5:30 or whatever that time period may be, again, that might be okay, but don't try and hide behind a policy or don't try and dress it up as something that it's not. Be really honest about it. Explain your reasons and accept that that might limit the kind of talent you attract. But I think ultimately our advice would be in our kind of view of the themes we're seeing emerging would be to take the press with a pinch of salt, to dig into the headlines and go, actually, Twitter are doing this, but what else are they doing? And they do really good boundaries. They do really good, this is okay, this is not okay, because boundaries without explanation are not useful. I find young people very good at setting boundaries, but boundaries are okay, but you also need to say this is an acceptable level of behaviour and this is not. And what's missing with that is what behaviour is not okay when you're in a physical meeting and what behaviour is not okay when you're in a virtual meeting. And I think that's the big thing that organisations and leaders are missing. And the second thing I think that we've covered that's really important is around what's right for the work, not the leader. And that's a real skill that you've got to have as a leader, is to lean out of the way of your preference and lean into what's best for the work in general, not individuals in the team.
I wonder, you know, whether it's everything becomes blurred, doesn't it, around, well, that doesn't work for me. You know, you want me to come into the office every Tuesday, and Tuesday's a really bad day for me because I prefer to work from home because I always go to the gym on a Tuesday night, or I have to pick up my little child from daycare or whatever. People, you're just never going to be able to please all the people all of the time.
And you shouldn't try. Like, at the end of the day, work is an
exchange. But people will keep saying that that's not fair, and that's not fair, and they will inevitably make comparisons. And I just don't know how you do that without basically saying to people, look, it may not seem fair to you, but these are the reasons why we're doing it. But the flip side of that is to make sure that you actually do the work on the day that everybody's in work, and you stick to the, you know, the two things match up. You can't say, oh, we're going to do collaborative work on a Tuesday, and then everybody sits in the office and never speaks to one another.
Yeah, or on virtual calls with clients.
Yeah.
And I think you raise a really good point there around the people will say it's not fair, but actually you answered your own question, because all you can do is explain your reasoning really clear. And if people are still going to push back, the conversation is, if that doesn't work for you, you can go and work somewhere else. Because like you say, everybody compares. Oh, yeah. My husband's brother does this and this. And well, go and work there. But actually what they don't hear is the pros and cons to working there either. Everybody's got these little stories. But what we actually need to be better at doing is setting boundaries with expectations, really clear expectations and really clear communication for why it is like it is, and then measuring the output of that. And that's what's missing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are a number of things, just thinking about people working at home, that might not work for them. They might, you know, somebody might be quite lonely on that. If you live on your own and you work virtually all the time, your physical contact with people, which we all know is so important, this, you know, we're social animals, aren't we? Really important for some people, more than others. Some people are quite happy with it and would rather do that.
This on the motivation course that we do, around self-determination theory, and relatedness is a core component of psychological well-being. And this certainly happened to me in the pandemic. I have a coach, as most coaches do. And it's quite alluring to work from home and to be in your own company, because nobody disagrees with you. And interaction with others is hard when you haven't done it for a while, and relationships take time, right? It's much easier to sit in a world where you're like, oh, that person, like in your own head, that person's like this or that person's like that. It's more difficult to actually lean into that healthy conflict and to work through your issues and confront people and lean into the complexities of life and relationships. Whereas when we work from home for a long time, you actually stop wanting to be around people because it's hard, mm-hmm. But it's what we need as animals. We actually need that. I certainly found this, you know, that I kind of got where I don't want to go out, or I want to stay in my own little bubble. But what I actually needed was to go back into the office and to work with people, because that's how I do my best work, and that's what I need to be psychologically well. But we don't always know what's best for us. And I think if your motivation is waning, you've really got to ask yourself, could relatedness be the thing that you are missing? But it takes a lot of energy in the interim. It takes a lot of energy to get dressed, to go to work, to make small talk with people, to sit in an environment where you have to focus. Because at home, it's far easier to focus when there's no distractions. At work, it's difficult to focus when people are constantly distracting you. But that's a skill in itself as well. And again, I just think we're finding the easy ways out. And there's a lot of parallels with this and the way people in society are. You know, this cancel culture, and people are in one camp or the other. Nobody engages in dialogue, where you could be right about one thing, wrong about another, unsure about another, and that's okay. ideas are all on a continuum and we can disagree or agree on a continuum, versus being somebody that we totally disagree with or we don't like. And I think we're falling into that a little bit with the working from home, or, well, we're seeing it, aren't we? You're either all in or you're all out. I think the organisations that will be most successful are the ones that can muddle through this difficult period of allowing some kind of hybrid working that works around the work best. But it takes the most effort. It takes uncomfortable conversations. It takes writing a policy and then explaining it and then disappointing some people and then it not feeling fair to others. And that's difficult.
It does, because it will inevitably end up with some kind of consequence, or what consequences are people going to have ultimately if they don't want to play by the rules? I think you have to go back to saying what the rules are and the reasons why you have the rules and be able to model those so that you actually do what you say you're going to do. I mean, there are plenty of organisations now that are attracting people because they let them work from home, or the opposite, where people want to come into work, so they get people going to work. But what happens to those people that sit in the middle, the ones that keep saying, it's not fair, I don't like this, it doesn't work for me, if I compare it with somebody else? And as you say, you know, the stories that you look for are the ones that suit your own sort of preferences, aren't they? It's that confirmation bias that you're looking for.
I think
for.
It's tricky, and you'll laugh because this is a big conversation that we have a lot of times with very senior leaders. I would implore organisations and leaders in that facing that issue to try not to lean into those people, because you end up with 80% of the focus being on 20% of the people that are unhappy and are determined to have it every which way. And you have to keep your eye on what's best for the work, what's best for the majority of people. Let the work direct the working, not individual preferences or leadership style. And I keep bringing it back to that, because if you let yourself be sideswiped by people that are going to say, this isn't fair, they do this at this organisation, this doesn't work for me, you're going to end up going around in circles, and you're going to create a culture where it never feels fair, or a culture that's not ultimately not that productive, because you don't ever learn how to have constructive criticism. Level two on the Patrick Lencioni's 5 dysfunctions of a team. You know, you can't have healthy conflict in an organizational environment where people can't even agree how they will work together.
How they work. And you make a very good point, because you can create a lot of resentment amongst the people who are your 80%, the people who are productive, the people who are a little bit more malleable. You create an awful lot of resentment in those people if they think it's not fair, because they're having to do more work just to cover somebody else, or even worse, that the boss is doing one thing and saying another, and I'm having to work really hard, and the reasons that we're coming into work are these, but then actually when we're in work, it's something very different. And I do think there's a danger of creating quite a lot of resentment in those people, and they, you know, they're your most productive group.
Absolutely. And this comes back, we've talked about this time and time again, but it comes back to communication. It is not okay to just communicate your working from home policy once a year. You need to be having this conversation and explaining the reasons on a monthly basis. And I think this is tricky as leaders, and I am thinking of a couple of leaders in mind here who, they think communicating is telling people what they want them to do, but communicating is also listening to your team and getting feedback on what's working and what's not, and actually engaging in a really constructive dialogue. What's working for you, what's not, and maybe checking in on that on a quarterly basis. and having a discussion around what are the rules for the next quarter around how we work, and taking that feedback, leaning into it, what's worked, what's not, what are the expectations, who's not met them, and what are the consequences of not. And I know that sounds like hard work and it probably sounds like over communicating, but the consequence of not doing that is the resentment and the little corridor comes, oh, so-and-so gets to do this. Oh, it's all right saying you need to, we all need to be in the office, but then the boss rolls in at 10.
Yeah.
Like, you have to communicate regularly. If you're going to do hybrid working, you have to talk about how flexible the work ways of working can be regularly, and you have to revisit what's working and what's not regularly. If you're just going to dictate everybody's in at 9 and they leave at 5:30, that's fine, but you as the leader need to role model that, and every leader under you needs to do the same.
Yeah, otherwise people do become quite resentful, because you're expecting people to be open, aren't you, to working in a slightly different way or working within a certain set of boundaries that you're creating, and giving those reasons. So on that basis, I like the idea of reviewing this every sort of 3 or 6 months even, but you being open as the leader to what is the work actually demanding, and has that changed, and what has happened as a result of having people in the work. Can you measure the output? Can you measure people's behavior? Is it a better culture? Is it a happier, more productive office than it was when everybody was just working remotely? And I think it's not just about working at home, is it? It's working in a remote location. So you may well decide that what really works for you to be quite productive is to go off to a place where people work in, and you've done this, haven't you, Rachel, where you work in a shared office space.
Or a hotel.
Hotel. But
all people that work at the university or that work in big corporations, I know leaders that are in back-to-backs a lot of days. So when they can work, they don't want to go to the desk. They go up and hide on another floor and sit in a little booth or somewhere where they won't get disturbed. But it's about explaining why you work with it. Yeah, what that pattern is, that I think is really important, because people do need to work together. People do need to sit together, but people also need time by themselves to reflect and do the work dependent on the work.
So we've covered quite a lot of different areas, but they're all, as we would say, a bit probably blurred. If we were to put these into 3 leadership essentials.
I would say the first leadership essential that we'd employ you to think about, just ask yourself the question, if you're a leader, what are my preferences? And am I pushing my preferences and my biases to my people, or am I allowing them to look at the work objectively and have a dialogue with the team around what is the best way to work for the work that's required?
Yeah, so
am I genuinely
open to listening to different people's perspectives, talking about how they work, what their work requires, rather than me sort of wanting to make my own agenda work, because that
and also though, John, I would counter that with what's best for the work, not so-and-so in my team's got kids, so they need to pick up their kids on Thursday, and so-and-so goes to the gym. No, they're not the reasons, because they didn't exist before. What is best for the work? Now, if that just so fits that you pick your kids up on a Thursday and that's the day you work from home and you are doing work that's solitary, that absolutely works. And if you can make it work that way, I'm not saying you shouldn't. But it's take your own agenda out the way and your own preferences based on what you listen to in the media, and actually look at objectively what is best for the work. That would be the first question. that I would be asking as a leader. The second, I think, would be around what do the levels of people in your organisation require? So what kind of leadership style do they require? Do they need more directive leadership, i.e. they're junior? Are they more middle or senior management and they need a more non-directive leadership style? So what levels of have you got in your team, and therefore how much that let that dictate how much you allow them to self-organize? Because it's not effective to dictate that junior members of staff work in the office and senior members of staff can work wherever they want, because who are the junior people going to learn from? Therefore, you might need to consider mandating certain days where everybody's in the office, for the sole reason that that's how younger people learn, by watching others. And that's okay, but explain that and make sure everybody's on the same page with that.
Yeah, it's that ability to be able to spin around on your chair, isn't it, and ask somebody rather than being too remote to get any really good solid leadership or any direction from. So that's the second one then. So finally, my third one is to really work out why we attend a lot of the meetings. What is the role of each individual when we're in a meeting? What works for the work, as you say? And often we have lots of meetings when really we could send out information perhaps in a different format. We don't need to actually have people there. But the fact that people can understand exactly the reasons for them being in the meeting, and what their role is and what's expected of them.
Yeah, I like that one. And I will quote you almost on this one. You know, if it's just a couple of you that need to have a chat, you don't need to schedule a meeting, just grab the person and have the chat. Like, that is often a way more effective way than having a meeting. And if you haven't got a properly designed agenda that comprises of a series of questions and it isn't communicated to you why you should be in that meeting, don't go.
Yeah, well, it's about having the right boundaries in it, and so people know that you actually structure your meetings so that people are not bouncing from one to the other. I just can't think how more ineffective meetings can be if you're just literally on one after the other.
And that needs to be the leader's responsibility or the worker's responsibility to take action and accountability for their own day and diaries.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a really nice place to leave it. So I hope you found this conversation useful. If you have, please do give us a follow in the whatever podcast channel you subscribe to. And if you are an Apple Podcast, please do give us a rating, because we really appreciate it. Next week, we've got a guest on the podcast, so we'll be back to interviewing somebody. But for now, hope you've enjoyed this discussion, and speak to you soon.
Yeah, happy working, everybody.
You've been listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching.